Yo, Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It's I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel. Lamar.
It's early.
Yeah,
we're recording at 7 a.m. Rachel, that's enough coffee. It's enough.
I'm sick.
What kind of sickness do you have?
Don't worry, I took a COVID test before I came in.
Nah, sick. You probably got it. Let me tell you something. We're talking before this, and we're talking about COVID outside. And you guys got to take COVID seriously. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of people not taking COVID seriously anymore.
You think people have gotten too comfortable with it because they have a better understanding of it?
Alea took her mask off. She used to, We just had a whole 20 million conversation. We just had the generational wars out there. Alea used to always wear a mask. She's taking her mask off. You were the person that I looked to for seriousness, for inspiration. She always had the mask on. What happened?
What happened is that today I have to have a lunch with people. So I decided that I'll not wear my mask. And also it's 7 a.m. Yeah.
Van called us here at 7 a.m.
Yeah, you called us all here at 7 a.m.
No. Didn't call you guys. I asked you if you could do it. But I asked you, and if you couldn't do it, then we wouldn't do it. Like,
after the conversation y'all were having before, would you have been comfortable saying no?
No!
Exactly.
100%. And also, my mask is right here.
First of all,
I have it on me.
Tell you something right now.
I'm sick, and I felt uncomfortable saying no.
Well, let me tell you something. You guys, this is, okay, first of all, we're not going to have that conversation that we're having online. Look, this is the job, guys. This is the job. Your job, Alea, is to lead by example by wearing your mask. And if you don't have it on, I don't take COVID seriously. How about that? Like, I've told.
I would like to see what accountability you have for COVID because, sir, I haven't seen you wear a mask once since I've known you. And also, you come in here sick all the time.
See, so
he does.
You leave your tissues around.
But here's
bro.
But here's the thing, though. But this is the thing. See, I'm asking you to be better than me. I'm looking to you for guidance.
I already am. My mask is right here. This is the one time you see me without a mask. I think this is the first time you ever see my face.
It's very true.
Welcome to the Thursday pod, y'all.
I'm telling you guys right now.
This is why we shouldn't do 7 a.m.
7 a.m. is lit.
People are a little cranky.
They came in here.
Still wiping the crust from their eyes. We're not all together.
What did I have on when I came in here?
iPads. See what I'm saying?
I had the eye patches. By the way, them bitches don't work. There's so much stuff that they're just like throwing onto you women in the beauty situation.
No. I'll give you some good ones to use.
Oh, yeah. Because shit's not going to work. I have something I want to say to people. Just have to address camera real quick because this is very important, Rachel, that I say this. To everyone, just get to it. Just ask for the favor. Have 4 or 5 different conversations this week with people who want me to do stuff. How your mama doing? How's the dog? Blah, 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 blah. The 30 minutes later, can you do this? I ain't got time. I'm getting old. Okay? You never call me to check on me. You don't call me to check on me. You don't give a fuck how I'm doing. You need something. Just ask for it. It's okay. I'm either going to do it or I'm not. The 15 minutes that we spent on the phone is not to make me feel better because I'm going to say no and I'm going to say yes. It's to make you feel better. I don't have time for your feelings anymore. Ask for a favor. Get to it. Okay? All favor conversations, I'm putting a limit. All favor conversations shall not exceed 90 seconds. Van, what's up? How you doing? Cool. I need something. Boom. All favor conversations shall not exceed 90 seconds. Because in the future, if I feel like you're calling just to check on me and then you ask me for something, I'm going to call it out in real time. Sick of it. I don't have time. I got the Vision Pro. I got Bozeman. I got brand new games releasing on the PS5. And coming out on the, I got a write. I got all kinds of stuff. There's movie production going on. There's podcasts, several different ones. There's conversations with people that I like. There's the playbook. There's the BBI. There's a lot of things that are important to me. You making yourself feel better about asking for favors, not one of them. That's it. That's all I got to say. I have to say it. Get to it. Rachel calls up. Rachel gets right to it. Fan, what the blah, blah, blah. Boom, done. Then after we talk, after we get at me this and Rachel, after we get to our business, true. Then we talk for an hour just about dumb shit. How about that? I'm sick of it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's not about sorry. Because it's not, there's no judgment. I know it's odd for, it's awkward for people. It's awkward for people to ask for help or ask for a favor or ask for something. It's awkward. I get it. I'm saying you don't have to be awkward with me. Just ask.
Just ask straight up.
Just, hey, 90 seconds, man. 90 fucking seconds. You ask for your favor. 90 fucking seconds. I give you some flavor. Fuck it. Donnie.
What up?
Tell the people what's going to happen after today's podcast.
I'm going to be going on paternity leave, preparing to be a parent.
How long is that going to last?
Starting. It's going to be 6 months. I'll be back in September. September 1st. Bonding time. Special bonding time.
It's a fucking
joke. Looking forward to it.
I think that's great, Donnie. Thank you. I'm sure your wife appreciates that.
Oh, yeah. She definitely does. I'm going to be there for the preparation of the... Because due date is coming up very soon. We are having a boy. Super excited. And this whole experience has been interesting. And the closer we get to it, the more, I think, reflective I'm getting. And I'm honestly super looking forward to this time, being able to spend it with him. Because we've been trying for a long time. It's been a process. And getting here and crossing this finish line is dope. Dope is like an understatement. I mean, it's amazing. And that's an understatement.
Aww.
But yeah, I...
Unmoved.
I can't wait.
You can cry. You can cry, Donnie. I can hear it.
You want to cry? You're feeling...
And I'm so happy for you
guys. What's your son's name going to be?
Junie James Beecham.
Junie James Beecham?
Yeah.
So you think it was appropriate to give him a slave name?
You think Junie is a slave name? No, I don't,
Junie is definitely a slave name. Junie is for sure a slave name.
Junie, I got that from Junie or Walter Junie Morrison of the Ohio Players / Parliament Funkadelic.
Really, Donnie?
Okay, so this is what I would say. Yes. This is what I would say. So, the Ohio Players, what year was this guy born?
Not during slavery.
He wasn't, but he was born in the era. So his name was Walter Junie. So he was born...
Probably like the 40s, 50s.
He was born in 1954. Yeah. Okay? So he was born in an era where...
No, Donnie, don't let him do this to you.
It was still
Junie
connected
James was
to
super
it.
Super cute.
Right?
See, it's short for Junior. He was the youngest member of the Ohio Players when he joined.
No, I'm
and
not saying it's
they
not...
were like... It's just a short for Junior. Black people are super creative. This is another example
super
of
creative.
Them
junior
just making junior.
Yeah, I think we've had better innovations. Yeah. You know what I'm going to name my son? Like, when I have a son, Donnie, I'm going to name my son Chicken George Leaf.
You do that. Sponsors by churches.
Sponsored by churches is Texas Chicken. Look, Donnie, all seriousness, bro. So excited for you, man. We're going to miss you, but Ashley's going to fucking hold it down. The Quirk Queen is going to be around doing the thing. It's a big, big moment for Quirk Queen. She's now the Quirk Queen of the show. Is Ashley there?
I sure am.
Quirk Queen. Donnie's going to be gone. Okay? And Smashley / Quirk Queen, it's your time. All right, it's your time to go for
my time to shine.
Your time to go for
you don't replace me.
It's Ashley. It's cutthroat. Ashley. I was trying to tell Leia this earlier. It's cutthroat out here in these fucking streets, man. You should be going crazy. Going all kinds of shit, man. Doing all kinds of
let's
different
go,
shit.
Let's go, man.
What? I'm trying to...
Nobody's listening to you right now.
What? Ashley's listening to you? You don't think she's thinking this?
Ashley,
you're thinking about... about taking Donnie's spot. You are. It is the way that it goes, man.
It is. Actually, it is the way that it goes.
Nah.
Donnie, but you know what? Good for you, Donnie. As excited as I am for you, and I absolutely believe you should take every month you have. You should also be a little nervous.
Yeah, a little nervous. You never know. I mean, what if things work better? You know, what if Ashley, you know, week two, Ashley gets the hang of it, and then Ashley.
Hopefully they do. Yeah. Hopefully they do. I'll come back to a brand new, but still very well oiled machine, and we'll keep it going. Keep that improvement going.
Well oiled.
I hope it's best.
Yeah. Very excited for you. Junie James.
So cute.
That's the name of a defensive back. How come we always got to make them play sports? Junie, you know what? Junie is a good politician name. Hey, vote for me.
I think, yeah. Junie. I can see that.
Junie.
I don't know if I would want him to be a politician.
Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't either. Because I'm his godfather, right? I should be able to christen him?
Just keep laughing, Daddy.
I'll just laugh, yeah.
Y'all have a very low opinion of me. Fuck y'all, man. Let me tell you something right now. I'm gonna have a son. Well, I don't know. I have a son or a daughter. And then if I have a daughter, I'm gonna name her Hattie. And if I have a son,
Gladys, Hattie. Ruth is always
Queenie.
There.
Let's take it back to the old school names. I've changed on this. I've totally changed. I like Junie. Let's take it back to the old school names. We need a whole fucking generation
Kizzy.
Of Hatties. Kizzy's.
Shout out to Gertrude. Trudy.
Trudy. Gertrudy.
Trudy definitely had Lizzie, that name.
Lizzie. We need to bring it back, man. Like, don't we need to bring it back? I feel like we need the Maddie. Let's take it back. Fuck it. All these names is not working for people anyway. Like, all these new names is too... Let's take it back to our roots, man. Fuck. All right, it's time to talk about Diddy, goddammit. It's the big deal of the day. Look, the only reason why this is the big deal of the day is because people are obsessed and people can't stop talking about it.
You saw my message in the group chat.
You don't give a fuck anymore.
I said enough.
Enough.
I'm sick of the shit. It's not Diddy. It's more of like Diddy's the main topic, and I think that should be discussed just because of his presence or what he means to the culture. But it's all the side conversations that are coming underneath it that I'm like, I'm over it.
Side conversations brought to you by Church's Texas Chicken. You know what we're gonna do here?
I still haven't seen that anywhere.
It's Texas Chicken. It is. I want to do something here. Van Chicken Nigga Lathan. I want to have a Church's Texas Chicken taste off.
No,
I do.
I don't like Church's.
I don't like it either. But they've rebranded. The question is, have they retasted? Right.
You sure?
Church's Texas Chicken is so hilarious to me. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like McDonald's French burgers. It's the same shit. We've been on that shit.
I don't know why they rebranded the name. That's so, why do you know that?
Because I seen a commercial for it. It was, who you think was in the commercial eating the chicken?
Us.
Black man. Black man tearing that Texas chicken up. All right. Big deal of the day on the other side of this.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Diddy been hit with another lawsuit accused of sexual assault and harassment by a male producer. $30 million. Rodney Little Rod Jones, producer on the Love album, which everybody loved, by the way.
Yeah, they did like that.
Music dropped. Has filed a lawsuit in federal court. He alleges several things. He says that he's seen Diddy engaged in serious illegal activity. Claims that Puff forced him to solicit sex workers, some underage, and pressured him into having sex with them. Claims that some of the sex workers were given drinks laced with drugs at Combs' direction. Says that he was shown a sex tape of a man that he believed to be Stevie J. He was a longtime collaborator of Diddy's. Worked with Diddy, one of the hitmen back in the day. You know Stevie J from reality TV. And says that there was constant, unsolicited, and unauthorized groping and touching of his anus. Okay. Wait, Okay, let me tell you why.
Please.
I can explain that laugh.
Okay.
I can explain that laugh. That's not funny.
No.
Okay, at all. I can explain that just because the anus part of it.
The word makes you laugh?
It's how do you grope somebody's anus? When you are you touching their butt?
Yeah, I think it's like a...
But that's like you're getting to the hole, though. It's not funny, guys. But when I first read it, I thought, how do you grope someone's anus? Right? Are you... Is he... You're going up
I
in
think
the,
you. I think you... It's a little... I don't know.
I'm just... Okay. It's fine. It's fine. He also alleged that Puff was grooming him to pass him off to his friends. There's just a lot of shit in this, guys. I'm not
it's
going through
it. 75 pages.
Yeah, it's he talks about Young Miami's cousin. He talks about Cuba Gooding Jr. He talks about two other people who they redacted the names. A couple other people they redacted the names.
He talks about Justin Combs. He mentions the CEO of Universal Music Group. Those are names that aren't redacted.
Right. These people are named in the suit.
Yeah, they're named. They're named defendants.
Yeah. He also mentions people by description who it's very easy to tell who he's talking about.
Which is wild to me. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go through that redacting the name, then you have to redact the corresponding sentence that describes or the footnote at the bottom, which is how we get to the meat meals of it all.
So we'll talk about that a little bit later because a lot of people are making the connection between, you know, Usher and Meek Mill, whoever. So look, I'll say this. There's a backstory to this. This same producer, Lil Rod, had been having a publishing issue with Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had taken to his Instagram some months ago to tell people that he was starting a GoFundMe to sue Diddy over his publishing. And then this $30 million lawsuit comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Connect those two things. Do you think that this is a serious lawsuit? Or do you think that there's frivolity to it based upon a business dispute?
I mean, can't both be true? Because it could be that because he probably said, listen, I traveled with you for, you know, over a year as we were working on this album. I lived with you in New York and Miami and LA. I don't think that those facts are disputed. And I was privy to some of this information, or I witnessed some of these things, or some of these things happened to me. I don't want to go here, but I will if you don't handle this situation. I'm going to get paid one way or another. It could be. I don't know. This is all speculation at this point. I will say that since he has filed this lawsuit and it's become so public and so many people have read it and have had their opinions on it, one of the accusations has already been disproven. I mean, one of the Stevie J, because also within this lawsuit, there are pictures, screenshots of videos or things like that. And one of those with Stevie J with another man. And the person who is really in that came out and said, that's me. And other people even noted, this is a scene from this movie that this porn star was in. So certain parts of it are already being challenged. So I don't, to answer your question, I don't know.
So this is what I would say about that. He alleges that Puff showed him a video and claimed that the guy in the video was Stevie J.
I mean, he knows who Stevie J is. He could look at it as well and tell if it was Stevie J.
Maybe, maybe not. I'm just saying, but like maybe, maybe not. The allegation is that he showed me a video and Stevie J is in the video. The picture that they showed was blurry.
That we saw.
That we saw. Like he showed me a video and said, hey, this is Stevie J in this video. And this is how we get down, or this is whatever this happens in the music business. That might have actually happened. Like that might have actually happened. Like he might have been shown a video and then been told that it was Stevie J. Materially, the fact that it's not Stevie J there doesn't really change the accusation. What it changes to me is the seriousness of the actual lawsuit.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. So yeah. So I guess we're on the same point. I'm not saying that he wasn't, because a lot of people are looking at it as like, oh, he says that Stevie J is involved in this, and that means that this incident that he's saying about being shown this video didn't happen. I'm not saying that.
No, but it takes away a little bit of credibility.
This, oh, yeah, because if you put it in a lawsuit and you say that it's Stevie J, that means that this lawsuit isn't well vetted and it becomes a less serious document when there are inconsistencies like that. I think we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. And there are other things in here that are in the lawsuit that are being disproven according to Puff's people. There are some women that have been pointed out as underage in the lawsuit that Puff's representatives are saying.
They have come out and said that this is me.
They've come, hey, this is me in that picture, blah, blah, blah. Now look, obviously, bread can get thrown around, blah, 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 blah. This is what I'll say. There's enough smoke for anybody to want to believe anything that they want to believe about Puff at this point.
Yeah.
And it's the problem is when you get to this type of when you get in the type of situation that he's in, when your reputation has taken this much shrapnel, it's difficult for people to come out and defend you and say that none of these things happened, right? But at the same time, if you're looking at just this, there have been lawyers on the internet, people that I trust, people that leave no space for sexual assault or harassment, that have said that this lawsuit is a mess. That it's a mess and it seems like a hit job and it doesn't seem serious. It seems it's thrown together and it seems to a lot of people to be a money grab. Just being honest, guys.
Well, we don't know, but I from 75 pages, the pictures, it doesn't seem, to use your word, well vetted. And it doesn't mean that some of this isn't true or all of it's not true. It's just the way it's put together, coupled with his public accusations of not getting the money that he deserved from his work on that album. It appears messy.
Yeah.
We'll just say that. But I also don't want to, because we don't do that on the show, take away from the victim or blame the victim in any of this. It's just the lawsuit as it is, if you're looking at it on its four corners, it just doesn't, certain things don't make it seem as credible as it could be.
Right. Now, look, I'll say this. It seems clear that there was a lifestyle being had over there that made people feel unsafe. That made people feel like they were compromising themselves. There's no way to get around that.
I believe it.
There's absolutely no way to get around that. It seems that there was a lifestyle being led by Puff and there was activities. And all allegations, we have to say that, we make sure that we keep out of the crosshairs. But there was a lifestyle being led over there that had a lot to do with drugs, had a lot to do with alcohol, had a lot to do with, I mean, there are other things in here that are like really, really direct. There's an allegation that there was somebody shot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then people were told in the studio to say he was shot outside because we don't want it to come back to us. They shot out standing outside the studio, you know. That case was, it's a real case that happened.
Yeah. And he's claiming that he has clothes from the incident.
And DNA that would be on those clothes. So we're not saying, I'm not saying that there's nothing in here that isn't true.
Right, right.
I'm saying it does look like a tool to settle a different business dispute.
Yeah.
And the reason why you would talk about that is because if you talk about the case, you have to talk about it from a 360 view. Because I don't think that any minds are not made up on Puff right now. I think that, I doubt that there's a road back for him.
No. There's not a road. And, yeah. And it's actually allowing more people to feel comfortable to tell their personal stories.
Yeah.
Columbus Shorts.
Columbus Short talked about stuff.
He talked about it. He must have done it recently, right?
I couldn't tell from the podcast.
It didn't seem like it was an old podcast. It seemed like it happened like in the last month, but he's telling his story about an incident that he had. There were rumors that he had heard. He had an incident and it just kind of confirmed to him. He felt that he was trying to be groomed, that Puff was trying to groom him in a phone conversation that he had. So I can't imagine how you would get back, because as I said, whether some of this is true or all of this is true, there was clearly something that has been going on for years surrounding Diddy.
Well, I mean, and at a certain point, you know, when the viability of his music interests were gone, when it really wasn't about music anymore. You know, there was a point in Bad Boy where every single record that they did, they were on this crazy streak. Every single record that they put out, every single single, every single album went gold or platinum. They were just killing it, right? And he was very viable musically. That viability hasn't really been around for a very long time, okay? But what he has turned into, what Puff has turned into, is a lifestyle ambassador.
Yeah.
So Ciroc is decent to drink, you know? But it's really not about that. It's about these commercials with us, and we're in Vegas, and we're the new Rat Pack, and the Ciroc this. It's a lifestyle brand.
Right.
De Leon is a little bit different. It tastes like gasoline. So it's difficult to do the same thing. But it's a lifestyle brand. It's a lifestyle brand.
Sure.
It's like, it, and so I can't think of more of a more debilitating set of circumstances for someone who is selling lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because what all the speculation and all of the allegations that are surrounding Puff, what they put under the microscope, what they call into question, is the lifestyle. Is it a lifestyle of exploitation, of sexual right. assault, of human trafficking, of all of those things? And so once you dig into it more, you know, it's like the dark side of Ciroc or whatever.
Do you think there will be more?
Yes.
More people filing lawsuits?
Yeah.
Well, I just saw, it's a woman. She was saying that she was going to sue Diddy because she refused to do the things that he asked for and it ruined her entire music career. Something Red.
Tiffany Red.
Thank you.
By the way, let me tell you something. I reached out to Tiffany Red some time ago. I want to have Tiffany Red on the podcast. We have to figure out when we schedule it. Shout out to Tiffany Red. I had a conversation with Tiffany Red. The conversation that we were talking about really had nothing to do with any types of allegations
mm-hmm.
against anybody for sexual assault or whatever like that. What it had to do with, she was talking about, Isaac Hayes put me onto her. What she was talking about is just the way songwriters are treated in the music industry.
Interesting.
And some of your favorites and how they steal credit and publishing from people who made their life writing songs. Yeah. And so it's a very interesting conversation. It's something I never thought about. I got Tiffany's information, and we're trying to figure out the schedule. I haven't been back in touch with her, but I would love to have her on the podcast because she just has a lot of information about the music industry, stuff that I had no clue about. So shout out to Tiffany Red. I would love to have her on pretty soon. Look, there's another fallout from this. Meek yesterday on Twitter got to talk about it.
We have to.
So here's the deal. Apparently Meek was busy when all of the chatter was going on about this, because people were talking about some stuff that was happening in the lawsuit. Because in the lawsuit, it says that there were underage girls and relationships that Puff has. Two separate things. In the lawsuit, it alleges that there was a rapper from Philadelphia who was in a relationship with Nicki Minaj that both had a sexual relationship with Puff and had gotten underage girls from Puff. It wasn't just him they said it about. They said it about a singer who had done the Super Bowl. And we know who they're talking about.
Right.
The internet deduced that this was Meek Mill. And the joke started flying. Because there's nothing that people like anything more to do than speculate on somebody's sexuality.
I know.
It's the favorite thing. Once they think that you are gay, particularly if you are a black man, the jokes are going to fly. He was literally accused in the lawsuit of sleeping with underage girls. And 95% of the jokes and the criticism that I saw had to do with whether or not he was gay.
Right.
So at least from what I saw, there was a clear choice in what people wanted to throw their jokes and their criticisms on. Now, I did see some people saying that, hey, this is the whole thing, underage right. girls and all of that. But most of the thing was, is Meek gay? Meek went nuts once he got word of it.
I don't understand his tweets. Like, they're, I have to read them like three times.
You read Meek's tweets.
No, I'm not reading them.
Read them. Read Meek's tweets. Meek is
hot. He wakes up, whatever he's doing, didn't mm-hmm. see it.
So, read his tweets.
No man or what? Does he mean what? I don't know. No man or what ever approached me about gay activity and the whole place don't get flipped. Woke up seeing this on every blog like they know I'm coming. Laugh out loud. I change laws for our people. I donate millions. They are designed to destroy the image of black leaders. It can't work with me, though. You got to really kill me, and I still will get bigger after death. This God, not me. Laugh out loud.
Okay, this last one is key. This is Meek directly.
I don't.
This is Meek directly responding to what people are saying about him. This is the one. Go ahead, Rachel. Take it away.
When I got a girl around me, I'm fucking her twice a day. Laugh out loud. Ask some of your favorites. Pussy don't control me, but it's like a high. One love to the gay people, but that juicy pussy, do it for me. I done ran red lights to get that feeling. Y'all weird on here like devils. I want to go home.
Oh, my God. Look, man. Meek. Stop. Come on, bruh. Look, if you want to...
Mind you, Usher's been silent. Just Usher's been silent.
Usher's been silent. Look, bruh, come on, man. Look, this is the deal. Number one, bruh. Seriously, you might want to also say I've never been with any underage girls.
Yeah. Skip that part.
You might want to also say I've never been with any underage girls. Okay? I'm not saying anything in this lawsuit that's being said about anybody is true. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is, there is no way. There's one thing you can't convince people of.
And that is?
That you're not gay. Once people think or want to think that, homophobia is so strong that once people have that in your mind, that's it. You can't, and the worst way to do it, if you're going to do it, is to be like, yo, I get pussy all the time.
But why is that always the response? Like, that's what I don't understand. Why can't, okay, there's this accusation of you. Mm-hmm. Why are you about to laugh?
Because, you know what? You know I'm about to laugh?
What?
I'm about to laugh because... I'm about to laugh. I'm laughing because that's programmed in me as well.
So that's how you would respond. That juicy pussy do it for me.
I wouldn't say that juicy pussy do it for me. But I can think of times on this podcast where there have been things that have come up and I've been like, hey, not me.
Okay.
It's just this. It's the homophobia is so ingrained in us. We would almost rather anyone think anything about us rather than to think that we're gay. And you have to do work on yourself.
And that's what I'm saying.
To be comfortable enough to be like, hey, not like whatever people think, that he said that his manhood was in question. I'll tell you guys right now, I'm sorry. Like the gay man that you share your community with, they're just not less of a man than you.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to say. It's like, why does this have to be the response? I know we've kind of delved into this on the podcast before, but why is the response, one, that you're not a man, you must not be a man if you're gay, and two, that to prove your manhood, you got to be fucking two, five, whatever times a day. Like, that makes you a man. That's what I'm tired of seeing. You are not a man just because you have a lot of sex or you're running red lights to get it.
I think he was saying, he loves it.
But he's not alone in that.
He's definitely not alone in that. That's what people, like, that's what
you got to talk man, about how you are with women and it's always got to be sexual to prove your manhood. I'm over that.
Right. Or to prove your heterosexuality. Yeah. So my son, shout out to my son. My son said he warned people. He's like, look, be careful what you say about people on the internet because, you know, people will die behind their name. And I'm like, look, I commented in Mice shit. Mice does a lot of great work. Shout out to Mice and Tamika. Tamika and Mice and everybody. Tiffany Lofton, Phil, Dream Defenders, Black Man Bill. Shout out to everybody out there doing that work. I'm saying this. If you harm somebody over jokes on the internet, or if you die over jokes on the internet, that's natural selection. If you're willing to die because somebody is calling you gay on the internet, we need you gone.
Oh, God.
I'm saying, what did Umar say? Donnie put it in.
But I want to be clear. I know some of us love our children, but some of our children are so far gone that we're going to have to put some of them to sleep in order to take back the neighborhood. Some of y'all don't want to hear that because you don't live in reality. But I'm telling you as a psychologist, I'm not going to be able to psychologize all them on the corner. Some of them going to sleep. Fuck that!
I did not see that ending. That is funny.
Wait. Who is he talking to? Who is he talking to?
He's talking to Phil Dunphy.
Donnie, just the last 10 words.
I'm telling you.
Just the last 10 words. I'll start yelling at you like
all
that.
All them on the corner. Some of them going to sleep. Fuck that!
He's had enough. He's had enough of y'all. Look, that's where that energy comes from.
I'm not saying that I agree with that. But what I'm saying is, if you're willing to kill or die because someone says that you're gay on the internet, you might need to go to sleep.
For how long?
For God! For good.
How have you not told us about this before?
That's what Mars Greatest
hit. Sitting on
you guys, we got to talk about our masculinity and all of that. Look, I get it. You don't want people to think things about you that aren't true. I understand that. I get it. I understand. Hey, listen, because this stuff isn't true. Responding to allegations is one thing, but I just feel like you're overdoing it, spending a whole day on it.
Yes.
Just, come on, man.
Yes.
All right. Fat Joe.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Stick with the rappers. Fat Joe supports Donald Trump's Never Surrender kicks, but not his presidential campaign. Fat Joe, hip-hop legend, says he has no issue purchasing Donald Trump's new golden high-top sneakers, even if he has zero intention of supporting his campaign to be president. Fat Joe showed these sneakers off. Donnie, give us audio.
Once again, I'm not a Trumper. I dislike Trump. I'm not voting for him, not now, not never. But I'm a sneaker collector into the art, so I had to find these. Now the mayor's gonna call me. Everybody's gonna call me and say, you wilding out, Joe. Why you got the Trump? Look, mayor's the first one. Joe, I'm a sneaker collector. I don't know what none of these guys did. I collect sneakers. The rarer, the better. No, I didn't pay for these sneakers. Sorry. I didn't pay for these sneakers. They knew I had to have them because I'm the biggest in the game.
What do you think, Rachel?
They knew you had to have them because, just as they said, well, the blacks are going to get it because they love their sneakers. And I think Fat Joe is representation of every single thing that they were saying in regards
to... Fat Joe ain't black.
That's right. always confuse. Wait, stop. You're right, because I got on here for saying the N-word.
Yeah.
Whatever. Minority. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Minority. They knew minorities who love sneakers, they're sneakerheads, will run and be a representative of this. Even if he's not black, he is representative of the culture.
I mean, he's hip-hop. He's a hip-hop
yes,
legend.
That's what yeah. I mean. He said
black culture.
Representative of the culture, but this is exactly what they wanted. Okay, they sent you shoes. You know, if somebody had sent you some exclusive with a swastika on it, would you have gotten them by any means necessary because you're a sneakerhead and that's just what you do?
Mm-hmm.
Now they can use Fat Joe. We sent Fat Joe sneakers. He's showing them off. They could use you in, you know, like their videos, their campaigns, and like, this is how we're gonna, like, I just don't understand how you don't get that the shoe, whether you bought it or not, whether you're voting for Trump or not, is a representation of Trump. And it gives reason for them to affiliate themselves with you or you with them just by simply having a pair of his sneakers. What are you going to do with them? Are you that addicted to being a sneakerhead where it doesn't matter who produces these shoes or what the message means or what it represents that you have to have them?
Mm-hmm. It's a MAGA hat for your feet.
Yeah. It's a MAGA hat for your feet.
The shoe is a MAGA hat for your feet.
Yeah.
The shoe is red hat. That goes on your feet.
Yeah.
Trump knows that, which is why he put the shoe out. The shoe increases the visibility, the brand visibility, and the cultural viability of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things, and there are sometimes things, a lot of things are, there's shades of gray in them, right? But there are things that are also binary. And one of the things that is binary is that you cannot say that you are wearing that shoe and that shoe is not an endorsement of Donald Trump. By the way, that's not the only thing that's an endorsement of Donald Trump. Anytime you use a Trumpism,
mm-hmm.
like everybody's saying fake news, everybody's saying all of this stuff, the embracing of Donald Trump, the mainstreaming of him into mainstream American cultural society is an endorsement of the way that he acts. It's an endorsement of the way that he comports himself. And as an extension of that, it's an endorsement of the things that he does.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is this. Not just Fat Joe, but a lot of people. There's been a mainstreaming of Donald Trump in a way that makes him less radioactive. And his radioactivity is the only thing that you can count on him for. The fact that he wants to offend you, the fact that he wants to grab power right in front of you, that he wants to rile people up and have them attack the Capitol, the fact that he wants to be disrespectful and gruff, and he wants to have proximity to racists and anti-Semites and all of that stuff. When you put those shoes on, or when you buy those shoes, or when you have those shoes, that is an endorsement of that.
Why did he have to make a video? Nobody would have known.
I know.
How is it going to wear them?
But see, there's another thing we have to talk about. Like, we have to have a serious conversation about our rappers. I keep telling you guys this all the time. We have to have a serious conversation about our rappers. This is not a personal shot at any rapper but understand, when your entire life and career is centered around being rebellious in a way, or being dangerous in a way, you want to stay that way, even if you're just doing it around the margins. So you want to say things sometimes to incite people. Some of these people can no longer incite people or disrupt things with their music. So they disrupt them with their opinions online. They disrupt them with the things that they would do or the people that they would be around. And then they're going to say, hey, I can do whatever I want to do. And that's the same way that when they were 24 or 25, they were saying, I can do whatever I want to do. I can say whatever I want to say. I can go wherever I want to go. And they can. And they can. But it's not so far removed from what Kanye did. Like, we have imbued, particularly hip hop artists, with a gigantic cultural weapon. We would say, hey, their music speaks for us. Hey, the way they dress, the way they act, the way it speaks for us. But it was always, we thought, and it probably never was, in line with the way that we looked at the world. We grew up and then they didn't. So we started to understand that there are consequences for some of these things, and they're still living in the same, they got money, they have cultural gravitas, they have all of this stuff, and then they just be doing shit. They just be saying shit. And the rest of everybody else is looking like, God damn, what the fuck you got? What the fuck you mean? What's going on? Like, that's what you on now?
Yeah.
And something else. If there is a certain mentality that connects some of these brothers and sisters to people that might actually agree with them in parts of the Black community, that's fine. I get that. But because you've been imbued with so much privilege, with so much money, with so much influence, so much visibility, I expect you to do better. I expect you to, I expect you to take it more seriously. I expect you to take it more seriously. I expect Fat Joe, who I've met before, talk with, great guy. I expect him to take that more seriously. I do. I expect him to know what that means. And I don't think that's an unfair expectation. Like, that's disappointing.
I think, and I think he would say, if he was sitting right now and you said that to him, I think he would say, well, I told everybody that I'm not a Trumper and I'm not voting for him. And not understand the connection of, one, getting the shoe, two, then letting the world know that you have this shoe.
I had to have them.
It's like,
it makes it, it makes the shoe a coveted thing.
I'm not racist, but you're literally doing something that's racist. It's the exact same thing to me. Like, I'm not racist.
It's like saying, I'm not racist, but I collect Sambo dolls.
Thank you.
Just because they're collectibles.
And the fact that you can't connect that is extremely problematic.
Yeah. If you have the Sambo doll, you're a racist. It doesn't matter how rare a collectible is. I'm not a, like you said, I'm not a racist. I'm not a Nazi, but I collect Nazi memorabilia. Some of that stuff is incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
And there are some people that have been fine with some of that stuff too.
Well, the old boy who supports Clarence Thomas. But it also proves the point, what I was saying at the very beginning, that we as a culture are people who are adjacent to the culture, right? Because not just I'm Black, but that are more concerned with material things. It can be swayed by material objects, money, shoes, whatever it may be, a certain lifestyle, than they are about actually caring what affects the people.
So this is what I'm saying though. And by the way, if you don't agree that this affects the people in a way, if you, it almost would be better. It would be significantly better if he actually was a Trump supporter. Then I can understand.
Yeah, of course.
Because then it's like, hey, it's for my guy. But to do it and to me, empower that movement and that
right
way of thinking and not even be for it just makes it, it's indicative of the recklessness that I'm talking about, right? That's the recklessness that I'm talking about. The recklessness that I'm talking about is, hey, I'm doing this just because it is, boom, 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 boom. No one is going to get some headlines. No one's going to get some looks. No one's going to get some of that stuff. That's the recklessness that I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you support Trump, you fucking support Trump. It kind of is what it is. Look, man, I'm saying what you just pointed out. This is a class issue. This is an issue of solidarity across class lines. I was talking about before. A lot of the people that we're talking about are luminaries. They've moved past us, right? Well, actually, excuse me. They've moved away from us and they think that they've moved past us. You have to struggle and endeavor into, stay solid with people, the more access to American riches and influence that you get. The class issue inside of our culture needs to be dealt with because you have people with a different set of priorities and circumstances. You're a sneakerhead. You love sneakers. That's collecting. That's capitalism. That's access. That's rarity. That's all of those things. And that means more than potentially empowering someone, right? Very directly as a wearable endorsement, in my opinion, that might make the lives of Black people worse. Now, we can, if you want to debate whether or not Trump actually does that, I'm here for that debate intellectually. I believe that he does. I believe that he provides an existential threat to stability, not just within our community, but here in our country, to the degree that we have that stability. and actually geopolitically worldwide. And I love to have that debate with Fat Joe, with anyone else. It's fine with me. Doesn't bother me whatsoever. If you're a Trump supporter, you're a Trump supporter. We can talk about why you are, why you're not. But if you're not, and you're still just going to fucking own the shoes, I would just wonder why.
It's so interesting that you talk about him being a threat with the timing right now, with the Supreme Court agreeing to hear the case of whether or not he's totally immune as president from prosecution.
Yeah, that nigga don't care. He's in the same position Netanyahu's in, which means they're going to do anything that they have to do to gain power or hold on to power, because the minute they don't have it, probably be thrown under the jail. Speaking of Netanyahu, Michigan primary, uncommitted, won 2 delegates in Michigan. It's a victory for Biden's anti-war opponents. Now, if you guys don't know what this is, the Michigan primary came up. Biden won the state, 618,000 voters. However, Rashida Tlaib, the first Palestinian-American woman to serve in Congress, amongst others, had advocated for people in Michigan to vote uncommitted. This write-in uncommitted as a protest vote to the way things are going in Gaza right now, the ongoing massacre of Palestinians in Gaza that they want Biden to move away from. All right. 100,000 people voted uncommitted.
It's wild.
If anyone understands the demographics of Michigan, which I'm sure that you guys do, you're very informed listenership here at Higher Learning. You know that he won the state by around 154,000 votes in the last election. You also know that Michigan has a very, very large Arab American Muslim contingent, particularly in Dearborn, where Biden actually lost the vote to uncommitted in Dearborn.
Yeah, 56%, I think, voted.
Yeah. So here's the deal. In a state where the margins are so thin,
mm-hmm.
do you think Biden's in trouble in Michigan?
So Biden won by like 150,000 votes,
mm-hmm.
I think, last time. If that's the case, so I've seen 2 sentiments, right? One is where some people who voted uncommitted are saying we're against the Trump presidency, and we also want Biden to be better. If that means pushing him to his limit, then that is what it will take, which that sentiment doesn't necessarily say, hey, we won't vote for you in November, but it says we want you to hear us. But the other side of it is saying that they're not going to go with the whole thing that my guy is less evil than this guy. And they think it's a weak argument. And they're saying they're not going to take blame if Trump is elected because they're going to believe in the Democratic establishment and believe that they have the right to exercise their vote for the things that they need. So there are people in the community that have been so affected by what's happening with Israel and Palestine that they believe that they've lost so much when it comes to their community that it doesn't really matter what happens here when it comes to a presidency.
Mm.
If that sentiment carries on and 100,000 people voted uncommitted and we know Michigan's always a flip state, a swing state. Oof, y'all bear with me. A swing state.
Flip state.
Swing state, then the fact that 100,000 people voted is scary. And it's also scary as other people are watching what happened and are watching this protest vote, particularly cities with big college towns. Like a lot of these students on these campuses are progressive,
mm-hmm.
and are against what's happening with this war. So they may also vote uncommitted and in the primary, and why it might not affect Biden right now. If the sentiment carries for the latter of what I said, it can affect him in the election.
Yeah.
And I think it's something to watch.
Are you concerned about his electability moving forward because of what's happening right now in Gaza?
I mean, I am. I think people are demanding, you know, for you to stand up and say that was over the top. That's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
People want to see actions. They don't want to hear you anymore. They want to see you outright condemn what Netanyahu is doing. They want you to outright take away your support, a lot of people from Israel,
mm-hmm.
and they want you to acknowledge what has been happening in Palestine.
Yeah.
And so I think that anything short of that, maybe 2 out of those 3 would get support towards Biden. But I think you're going to have to do 2 out of the 3. I really do. I think people are over, which we talk about this, like it compares to having these conversations about what the Black community is demanding, which is why I also find this very interesting, particularly your response to the Reddit post in regards to, is your vote enough? Like, you can't just vote. This goes beyond that, what they're doing. This is an example of that, to demand what the person that they voted for, what they expect from them.
I want to play something for you, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Donnie, I just sent you something. Did you get it?
I did. I'm ready.
All right. This is from a show that I love to watch called Rising.
Mm-hmm.
Robbie Suave, Brianna Joy Gray. I made a rap song up to the Rising theme song.
Of course you did.
Like, I listened to it
did
so much.
Did you send it to them? So
I'm going to.
Okay.
I'm going to lay it down and then send it to Brianna and Robbie.
Okay.
Because it comes on. Doom, I like it. Now I got, we rising, bitch. We rising.
Okay, that's not going to make it.
Okay, whatever. I'm gonna send it to him. So I want you to hear this, Rachel, from Michael De La Rosa, former Biden staffer for not just Biden, but for First Lady Jill Biden as well.
I think he's doing everything he can. I think nobody understands how pained people are more than Joe Biden. The guy is probably the most empathetic president who's ever sat in that chair when it comes to people who are really struggling with pain, grief, loss, and really, and violence and genocide, essentially. That said, it is, I struggle myself with whether, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, I'm no foreign policy expert, but I do struggle with whether a small part of one, a small community or a subset of the electorate in one state should determine our foreign policy. I don't know if that's necessarily healthy for the entire country. And would there be a focus on Michigan's dissatisfaction if those communities were in California or Mississippi or somewhere else? It happens to be a swing state, and that's why we're talking about it. But if those pockets of dissatisfaction were in non-competitive general election states, would we be focusing on it?
That's breathtaking. And let me tell you why. You are listening to someone in real time, in my opinion, say that he wishes that actual Americans had less influence over the people that they were going to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, hey, well, should a small subset of Americans in a place have say over foreign policy? Well, Americans everywhere should have say over their foreign policy, particularly Americans who that foreign policy is getting their loved ones burned to death by white phosphorus, murdered on the streets of their homeland, their homes turned to rubble, their limbs blown off. And all of that. It's part of who we are as Americans, allegedly. It's part of what we are as Americans to have say and to use the political power that we have, to leverage that power to affect not just this country, but America's place in the world in the way that we would want it to be, in the way that we want America to act. It's incredibly telling to me that someone with that type of purview and that type of proximity, at least in the past, to American power would lament how much power a group of American citizens has. The version of America that we get sold, that we get told, is that we are uniquely powerful amongst citizens in the world, is that the system that we that we're a part of and the system that governs us allows us to have the most agency in being a regular citizen, an average citizen in any place on this globe. And then you have somebody sit there and they say, well, I think it's regrettable that a small group of people have that much say. That's what I'm talking about. When I watched that, fireworks exploded in my mind. That's what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about the way that the average American citizen is viewed, when I'm talking about the way that people's priorities are viewed, the people in Michigan, I don't mean to speak for them, they're not voting on tax breaks. They're not voting on tariffs. They're not voting on spending. They're voting on the worth of the lives of their relatives. They're voting on their history. They're voting on their present. They're voting on their future. Not in some amorphous, conceptual way. They're voting for who lives and who dies. I honestly don't think that it went far enough, actually. But they're doing what they're supposed to do, right? So, I mean, the only reason why I say that is because there was some talk that, hey, we're vote uncommitted now, and then we'll vote for you in November. I'm just wondering how dire the threat actually is. But all I'm saying is this. When I listen to him talk about that, and when I listen to him say that, I don't know who Michael De La Rosa is. I'd never heard of him before he got on Rise. Yeah, the fucking people are supposed to decide the foreign policy. And they're supposed to use any means available to them to make their voices heard. Particularly when they're watching the horror that's unfolding over there right now. That's what they're supposed to do. That's what they're supposed to do. That is being an American. When I say they, I mean the American political establishment, and I don't care whether it's left or right. It vexes them that you could actually have any influence over them. It's vexing to them that your voice might matter more than their voice does. That's vexing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what to say. It's like, well yeah, it's a small... Yeah, they matter. They're in a swing state. Good for them. Good for everybody that lives in a swing state that gets to go out and vote on whatever the fuck they want to go. Minorities on either sides of the political argument, you got to talk to those people. You have to. You can't ignore those people. You can't ignore white people with Mountain Dew mouth in the Appalachians or in McDowell County, West Virginia. You can't ignore the niggas from South Baton Rouge. The black men and women from South Baton Rouge, excuse me, to my brothers and sisters. You're not supposed to ignore nobody. They're supposed to matter. Right. So deal with them. Go. Yeah, your political future might hinge on what happens in Dearborn, Michigan. What are you going to do? Not what are they going to do? Once again, I keep trying to say this. Not what are they going to do?
Right.
What are you going to do?
Right.
That's fair to me.
I think he said that because he's scared of what he saw happen in Michigan. I don't think Michigan represents a small number of how a lot of Americans view what's happening right now over there. And I think him saying that was to try to like deter it in a certain way. But when you look at what happened in Michigan and 13% voted that way, and this is a primary. So if that sentiment continues, it's only going to pick up across more primaries. We haven't even had Super Tuesday yet. And it's going to pick up towards November. And I think he's saying that out of fear because the reality is that's not how a small number group of people think. Mm-hmm. A lot of people feel that way.
Right.
And he's trying to diminish the momentum, which is why I believe he said that. Don't agree with him. I'm just thinking of it, looking at it as a different perspective is when you played that clip. I thought, oh, he's scared. He's actually scared that people may exercise their votes in a way that benefits their personal needs and interests and not just vote on party lines or what they're told to do. Mm-hmm. We haven't really seen that before. And so that's fear talking.
Fear.
That's what he represents. I know he doesn't work for the Biden administration anymore, but he's vocalizing what I would say are their sentiments. If Biden's got to make a decision, that administration, they really have to figure it out.
The podcast beat.
Mm.
Joe Budden and Candace Owens have a podcast episode coming up.
Are you jealous?
Jealous about what?
You wish it was you and Candace talking?
Oh, no. I wouldn't have any problem talking to Candace, but I'm not like clamoring. It was a back and forth to have her on.
I know.
She says that she doesn't get invited to Black media a lot.
So I think I know
she would
why.
Do, she would do a I don't lot more it's... Black media if she had the opportunity, she says.
Okay, I can see why. I don't think that there's a way to have a productive conversation with a Candace Owens. And so to me, it defeats the purpose. Now, you could say the same thing with Larry Elder, but he was running for president. So to me, that made sense. She runs for president. Let's have a conversation. Let's have a conversation with her.
So the debate is this. You know, I'm not going to go back and forth to the set of circumstances that led to her appearing on the show. Joe Budden said something on his podcast about her. She then replied on hers. And then she said, well, he said something to invite her
on. He said
on.
She was his new favorite. That's important.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't actually realize. I hadn't even heard what he said. Is that what he said?
He said that she was his new favorite, one of his new favorite people.
So then why did she react in, okay, we have to play both audios now because I didn't realize that had been said. Donnie, play what Joe Budden said.
I really do feel bad that one of my new favorite people is Candace Owens. Not politically. I had to clear that up. But when she cuts that off and is just a girl, she is the funniest person on the planet. By far. She's like political Azalea Banks.
Okay. Candace then responded. And this is what she said.
Ooh, Joe Budden, you better have meant it because I was watching. I'm watching. I just watched it again. Actually, I think I've watched it now about 3 times, and I'm going to take you up on your offer publicly. So now you can't do anything squirmish. You can't be like, oh, no, I'm not going to have you. I will definitively join your podcast and we can talk. And one of the things we're going to talk about is why every time any person in Black media or any Black commenter on the internet agrees with me, they always have to do that thing in the beginning. Oh, I just want to be clear. I don't agree with her politically. I don't think I agree with her politically. I don't get it. It's like a weird prayer that you have to say so that what? You'll still be accepted by Black people and you're still allowed to comment on Black issues as long as you say that you don't agree with Candace Owens. I'd like to know what it is that you don't agree with when it comes to my politics or why everyone feels compelled to say that.
So they're going to do an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been talk about it. Lots of consternation from people over the interview. I don't know if the rest of the crew's ICE-ish list four are going to be on this interview. I saw something on Twitter that said, hey, shout out to the rest of the hosts for not being on it. But I didn't see anything that said that they wouldn't be on it. So,
yeah, they posted a picture. It was just the two of them. So I'm going to assume it's just a sit down with the two of them.
Might be. But at the same time, just because they posted a picture with the two of them doesn't mean that she's not going to be on there with everybody else. I don't know.
Yeah.
So she posted that photo and then Peter Rosenberg, all reliable, he had something to say about it. He said, so sick of the idea that conversations need to be had with bigots, trolls, and immoral a-holes. Exchanging ideas among smart, good people is useful. Hearing a hateful hack babble on about hate is not worth anyone's time. Candace responded to Rosenberg. Literally, who the hell is at Rosenberg Radio? Who grew up one of the wealthiest towns in America to step to two Black people who came from nothing to tell them they shouldn't speak. Who the hell is Peter Rosenberg? Serious question. Peter Rosenberg, I would like to invite you to shut the hell up when Black people are speaking with one another. She concluded, Peter Rosenberg is a plantation supervisor. His dad, MJ Rosenberg, worked on Capitol Hill for Democratic senators and House members for 20 years and then worked with AIPAC 6 years thereafter.
You think she's funny? You like Joe?
That was funny. A plantation supervisor is funny. It's not fair, but it's funny. So look, this is what I would say. All right, two things. Number one, I'm not offended by Joe Budden talking to Candace Owens. Not in the least. Because you haven't seen the interview yet. Right? You haven't watched it yet. You haven't seen it. You don't know what happened. So I'm not in any way, I wasn't offended when Tucker Carlson decided that he was going to the Kremlin to interview Vladimir Putin. Now, I think a lot of people had trepidation about what direction the interview would go in.
Of course.
And whether or not Tucker would A, be able to handle an ex-KGB agent with the mind of Vladimir Putin, or whether or not he wanted to even handle him. Whether or not it would be a serious interview or a filibuster session, whereby a brutal autocrat is able to get his shit off basically unchallenged. It ended up being the latter. Tucker got worked. I don't think that he had very much for Putin. And he spent the rest of his time in Moscow talking about how nice the grocery stores and public transit was. All right. So most of the people that had suspicions about whether or not that would be a serious interview that really interrogated anything about how Vladimir Putin looks at the world or the war in Ukraine or our relationship with Russia, I think those people were proved right by the interview. There are a lot of people that are saying Joe can't handle this. Either he can handle it or he can't. Right. And so if he sits down and he has a conversation with Candace Owens and the conversation is conciliatory, if he's in over his head, it wouldn't be the first time someone sat down with her and they were in over their head, then you can criticize it. The very act of having the interview in the first place, to me, I actually look at it as Black people talking to one another. And like, the way I look at that, she has problematic ideas. You don't believe that she is genuine. You think that she's a grifter. You think that she's a troll. It's a lot of grifters and a lot of trolls and a lot of people out there. I would say that there are people that have probably come on Hot 97, and this is not a diss to Rosenberg because I think he's entitled to his opinion, and I'm not saying that he's wrong, but there are probably people that have come on Hot 97 that had, assault charges and all kinds of different stuff, and it shot. I mean, I'm just looking at it like, okay, if we start setting that type of litmus test.
That's not the test to me.
What's the test?
Well, okay, because here's the thing. It's not having a conversation with someone who has different political views than you, right? Okay. Like, we've done that. Those, when you have a conversation with like a Kamal, you don't necessarily agree.
Kamal.
You just, excuse me, no disrespect. Kamal.
Damn.
Made it sound more Black.
Yeah. He don't like that. He don't want that.
Even though we fundamentally disagree on so many things, it's still like a calm, educated conversation. I don't look at him as a liar. I don't look at him that he truly believes those things, and not necessarily it comes across as you're just being representative of the Black conservative to make money or whatever. I don't look at him as a grifter. I do have a problem with Black media or anybody sitting down with Candace Owens, because I don't understand the purpose of it. If the purpose is to, like, you want to challenge her and make her look a certain way and, like, factually come at her with everything that she says, because she loves to throw out statistics too, like Larry Elder, and you say to her, like that happened in the interview that we had, that this isn't true, if that's your purpose, fine. I just don't understand giving that particular person, she's different, any type of recognition or a platform that she'll say things and they'll pick it up and say, oh, she did this with Joe, or oh, she said this in this interview, or Candace Owens stands up to Black. It's not going to be us necessarily big upping her. It's going to be them. Candace Owens is anti-Black. She is only Black in appearance. That's it. And she might not even identify as Black. I don't even know. Everything Candace Owens represents is against Black people. Mm-hmm. You look at her greatest hits. She's against BLM. She called George Floyd, talked about him having a drug overdose and that he wasn't murdered. She's called Black Americans the most murderous people in America. She mocked Juneteenth and called it ghetto and made up. She stood in front of Congress and said that if she had to list 100 things that were impacting minority America, white nationalism wouldn't be one of them. Candace Owens represents the Black person who gives people an excuse, or gives people a reason to excuse their racism, or give them the freedom to be racist. I just don't understand platforming her particularly at all.
I understand that. So let me tell you like this. So number one, that's just not how I am. I get it.
Because you like to debate.
Well, I just think that disinfectant, that light is the best disinfectant, right? I think that you can talk about Candace Owens all you like. You can talk about people like Candace Owens all you like. But I think particularly when you're in front of someone, I mean, when we talked to Larry Elder, Larry Elder's unseriousness like jumped out through the camera. It did. It jumped out through the camera. It bursted out through the camera. And we, by the way, we didn't come to fight him. The question is, I mean, we've had other interviews here go bad. The Emmanuel Acho interview went bad. Now, not to bring him back into it, but there are a lot of people who feel about him the way they feel about Candace Owens. They just feel like he's a diet version of that. I don't think that that's true, but I won't know until I talk to him, right? So if I talk to him and it goes the way that it goes, I have no problem with that. I have no problem with the way that it, I don't have any problem with a tough conversation. I don't have a problem with someone that's insincere. I get why people do. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem having a conversation with someone who's insincere, because I think that if you're insincere, that your insincerity, exposing it, is very useful to people. It's useful to people who are particularly young and Black. Forget about the part of Candace Owens that is represented on the Breitbarts and Turning Point and all of that. You're never going to get those people, so forget about them. Who cares what they think? But if there are people who are looking to make their mind up about the way that they view the world, and Candace's ideas don't hold water, or even if the ideas do hold water and she doesn't comport herself in a way that's commensurate with a love for community. I'll tell you something like this. When there is a Black person on the show, what I'm going to try to do when I'm talking to a Black person is I'm going to try to show cultural love to them. That means empathy. That means understanding as much as I can. I don't do a good job all the time. And that also means a meeting of the minds in a way that says, hey, even if you're wrong, we can get to somewhere, because we both should have the health of our community in the back and front of our minds, right? To me, even talking to someone amongst Black people, not a white person talking to a Black people, even talking to someone, when it becomes obvious that that person, even if they have the right statistics, even if they have the right intellectual talking points, even if they have some shit to back the shit up that they're talking about, when it becomes obvious that that person doesn't love Black people, that that person doesn't have any skin in the game when it comes to, that they don't know how to talk to Black people, that they don't know how to act around Black people, that they don't know how to sit, that they don't understand, that they have othered themselves to the point to where you know that they don't have a cultural love or allegiance to Black people, I think that's useful. And I think that you can only get that a lot of times when you're talking to another Black person, when you're having a conversation with another Black person. She's done it on her podcast a lot. She's invited Black people on, but she doesn't get to be in Black rooms. So her martyring herself and saying, I'm opt out, I'm an op, they don't want to talk to me, they're scared of me, there's this, you throw gasoline on that flame. And then people start to wonder, okay, well, what are Black people afraid of? Can Black people have a conversation with the Candace Owens without getting emotional? And these are conversations that we have, right? Particularly now when the Trump-era MAGA-isms are gaining so much steam amongst Black people, allegedly. I personally don't think there's anything wrong with it. I understand when people don't want to do it. I'm not saying that they're wrong, but I don't see anything wrong with it. This also goes back to the way I view people and the way they're dealing with President Trump himself. They're giving you less President Trump on places like MSNBC, on places like CNN, a little bit more now that he's going to be the presumptive candidate, that he is the presumptive candidate, should I say. I think that's bad. I think it's bad. I think you should over Trump us.
Right.
But I do think you should cover President Trump, because you're hiding bruises and black eyes if you don't.
Yeah.
If you don't give people a dose of the medicine that turns their face all ugly, then to me, it gives cover to how grotesque he is. You know what I mean? Like, it to that to me is what I don't like. People get to, they get to operate like unmolested, right? They get to, with anything, like I personally don't think that that's the way to do it. Once again, but I also go throughout the world unafraid of what someone has to say, unafraid of being wrong myself, unafraid of hearing something from somebody that's wrong. And I'm not saying that, I'm not calling anybody pussy. What I'm saying is that, to me, I don't necessarily think that platforming Candace Owens makes Candace Owens more powerful, because I think her ideas are bad. I think the more conversations she has with people that can point that out, the better. Maybe I'm wrong. I will say this, though. even this conversation with Joe and Candace has a lot to do not with whether or not just all of this what that we're talking about is real or fake. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think if it's a two-hour sister-girl conversation where he gets railroaded and all of that stuff, then it was a wasted opportunity and it was probably bad. But until I've seen it, I can't really judge it on what the deal is, right? This is what I would say, though. You're probably going to see more stuff like this in podcasting, and I'll tell you why. That's because of Shannon Sharp. So Shannon Sharp has become a Diet Rogan. He's doing crazy numbers. And I think that you're going to see in podcasting, period, more interviews that you wouldn't have seen before, more celebrity interviews, more interviews with controversial figures that might give you a Cat Williams moment. You're going to see more interviews with people that might say things that, you know, take social media over, right? You're going to see more interviews like that because there are probably a lot of people that are looking at what Shannon's been able to do and looked at the last 6 weeks to 2 months that he's had, and they feel like they want to recreate that. Because we're not talking about hundreds of thousands of views anymore with what's going on in Club Shay Shay. We're talking about millions of views whenever he's dropping. We're talking about we're getting consistently 1 million, 2 million, like, types of situations. We're talking about consistently having people on there, interviews with, like, people that people really want to talk to, Johnny Manziels and different people like that. And so I think that that competition, particularly in Black podcasting, it's going to make people take some interviews that you wouldn't have seen them take before.
Maybe.
I think that that's the thing. So what I'm saying is this. If you don't like that, criticism of the interview is not going to help. If you don't like that. The only thing you can do is ignore it. Like, that's the only thing that you can do. My therapist told me this. Shout out to Coley. I know people know this. I'm not breaking any news. The opposite of love isn't hate. What is it? Mm-hmm. It's indifference.
Oh, yeah. People just say
it. It's indifference. If you do not like anyone that is being platformed or anyone that is being, if you don't like Jason Whitlock, if you don't like Candace Owens, if you don't like McCorder, Glenn Lowry, whomever, those guys are more intellectual, whatever. If you don't like any of those people, whomever it would be, the only thing that you can do that is effective, the only thing you can do that is effective is ignore them.
Which is why I don't want her on here.
That I get with. If you don't like them, the only thing you can do is ignore them. So if that's the point, I get it. To me, I would still.
I know you do.
Rather have the conversation.
I know. I mean, we also when we started this podcast, there was a point where we were like, we're not going to bring her up to talk about her anymore.
Yeah, we don't ever talk about. We don't really talk about people that are trying.
Yeah.
We don't talk about people that are trying to get us worked up. Okay, before we go, I got to ask you about one picture. Did you see the picture?
What picture?
We got to get some man woman stuff going on the podcast real quick.
No, that picture, I thought you were talking about Luther.
No.
And I said that in the chat.
Mm-mm.
You talking about the woman proposing?
So We've seen
this before. Have we not talked about this?
I'm going to tell you guys what happened.
I saw this picture.
I posted it on the internet. I saw a woman, and it might be AI. I saw a woman, she's down on her knees, and she was going for her forever, man. And it says, lady, don't wait for him to propose. Do it yourself. Real love right here. Donnie, show him the picture. It's a woman. She looks so happy to have found her king.
Good for her.
And she's proposing. She's down on one knee. She's putting the ring on his finger. How many fingers does he have? I got to see because it might be AI.
How many fingers does he have?
It might be AI. So he might have like 6 fingers. Nah, it's definitely AI. Look at this nigga hands. It is definitely AI. Rachel, do you have a problem with women proposing?
I don't.
Why do you think women have a problem with women proposing? Some of these comments from women under this is crazy. Let it's a hear. Fuck no from me, but I'm single. What the fuck do I know? I'd rather shit my... I am Mary Pryor. Shout out to Mary. Mary said, I'd rather shit in my hands and clap. Jesse said, Jesus. Jungle Jesse said, I'd rather wrestle a hippo. Lauren LaRosa, shout out to Lauren. I'd rather sleep. These are all people I know, by the way. I'd rather sweep the beach with my tongue. What? So why is this such a, why do you feel like women have such a problem proposing to a man?
It's obvious that this is one of those gender roles that have been, it's something that's been ingrained of, in us, that in our society, that this is how it's supposed to be done. I mean, even having to have a proposal, having to have the ring, having to have the wedding and all of that, it's just been ingrained, and it's supposed to be something where the man gets down and, you know, confesses his love and makes the decision and takes charge. And that's just something that's been there. So, like, I feel like we've talked about this before on the podcast, but that's just, I don't think that that's ever going to change in our society. I think that's something so, like, little girls, at least millennials, like this Gen Z can maybe tell me something different. I'd be curious to know how old this couple is, even though you said they're AI.
They might be AI.
Young girl, millennials grew up, you know, fantasizing about what their proposal would look like and how it would be done. And it was never even a thought that the woman could do it first. Mm-hmm. So that's carried into how we are now, now that we're of the age of being proposed to. I personally don't want to propose to a man. So, you know, call, say it what you want. I would rather... I would rather him do it for me. It's not, I'm not against somebody doing that. It's just not for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like it sets a standard.
What's the standard?
That you're the one taking the initiative. That you're the one...
So the man should be the one taking the initiative, is what you're saying.
Well, no, yes. Yes and no. It should be both. But this is something I believe that should be led by a man.
Should be led by a man. What else should be led by a man?
No, I believe a proposal should come from a man. That's me. That's what I want. That's what I want. I'm not judging people who do it a different way, or who maybe make the decision together. Like, hey, I think we should get married. Okay, let's get married. Like, that's however people decide to do it is fine. My preference, can we call it a preference? I would like for the man to do it rather than me taking charge and doing it.
This is what I think. I think everyone can do whatever they want.
Sure.
Everyone can do whatever they want.
How would you feel if the woman got down on a knee and proposed to you with a ring? No, you wouldn't like it.
Millie Rock. You know, but look.
Why wouldn't you like it?
I wouldn't have any problem with it whatsoever.
If a woman proposed to you, you'd be okay with that?
Yeah. What the fuck difference does it make? Look, here's the thing. My thing is this, and maybe I'm too much of a linear thinker, but either we doing gender roles or we not. What I don't like is the adherence and acceptance of some gender roles, but not others.
So let me ask you this. Is that, if I have a preference for the way that I want things to be done, right? If I have a preference of, like, I like my hair short rather than long, or I like this rather than that, my preference is that I'm the one accepting. I want the ring on my finger. I want him to do it.
That's fine.
That's my preference.
Everybody can have a preference. That's
and
fine.
Just because it's between a man and a woman, doesn't, I just feel like that's more of a desire, how I want my proposal to look. Right? Do I want it to be private or do I want it to be public? Do I want him to do it or do I want me to do it? Mm-hmm. I'm not judging other people that do it a different way.
I'm not judging them either. And I'm not judging anybody that wants anything. I think there are reasons why people have preferences. And I think that there's a lot of hemming and hawing. Because look, I want logic in this. So this is what I want. I want to be helpful at the end of the day.
No, you don't.
I do. I want to be helpful. No. I want to be helpful. I want to be helpful. I want to help people get out of their own way. And that's very important. It's very important to me that people don't, myself included, it's very important for me that people don't say one thing and then do everything else on the other side to affect what it is they want. So when you say that you want, like, when we talk about Black people, right? We're having conversations about Black people. We want to be treated as equals. We want equity and equality and all of that. But we still sometimes kowtow to white people in terms of respectability. No. Forget about white people. Forget about them. How do you feel about you? Not whether or not we embarrassing ourselves in front of you. You can't at one point, to me, feel like you want complete agency and power, and then at the same time, be so caught up in worrying about what the dominant culture thinks about you.
So this is what I would say about this. There's certain things that I want out of a partner, right? And certain things signify, an action signifies or validates or supports the things that I want from a partner, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't mean, and I would listen to what my partner wanted from me. And mm-hmm. it might be the same things. They might want security, safety. They might want all those things. I would give that to them if this is the person that I want to be with, even if it doesn't fit into the gender role of what a woman's supposed to be or a man is supposed to be. I also would like an emotional, sensitive man. Does that necessarily mean fit in the gender role? Maybe not traditionally, it doesn't. So to me, you taking initiative and getting down on a knee and saying, this is what you want, fits into line with the things that I want from my significant other. More than this is how it's supposed to be done, it's what I want for myself.
I accept that. This is my only thing that this is a question that I keep asking that I can't get an answer to. What are you supposed to do?
I just said, it depends what my partner wants.
Yeah, but that's not...
No, that
that's
is
not a sufficient answer.
And I'll
tell you.
That is true.
And I tell you.
No, that is true. Because then you're assigning roles. If I tell you exactly what I'm supposed to do, then that's a role. It depends on who I'm with.
But you, this is the thing. You have expectations, and the expectations that you have, or the preferences that you have, if we're being honest, are clearly based on traditional gender roles.
No, because I'm not fully there. I want my husband to help out around the house. Is that that's a gender role that's specifically assigned to women?
I haven't said every single thing I want. So what I'm saying is this. So we've talked about it before on the podcast. You want a husband that can financially take care of you, right?
If I'm not, not financially take care of me in the sense that they have to make more than me. I want them to be a provider.
You want them to be a provider?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I'm providing too.
Let's deconstruct.
That's one thing. No, I don't want you to do this all the time. I'm too sick to do this.
What I'm saying,
we do this all the time. I also want my man to help out with the kids. I want him to have to clean around the house.
So do you see what I'm saying?
I would do it too, Van. That's what I'm saying.
Hold on. But you would do all of that stuff, but you wouldn't propose. So what I'm saying is, this is all I'm saying. That's actually what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is there's a clear expectation and a clear preference that a man adhere to some gender roles, or else a woman can't feel secure. What I would say, though, is that there's almost nothing in a relationship between two people, be it platonic or be it romantic, that's not a trade-off.
Sure.
And so what I would say is, either we do away with the gender roles or we go with them. But having like a gender role mishmash, it's going to make people unhappy. Because what I see in my comments, like I saw women in my comments that was like, if that's the case, why don't I just take the trash out, kill the roaches and do all that stuff?
But that's her.
And all I'm saying is right now, I mean, you're single. You're doing that stuff now. So what I'm saying is when a man comes into your life and he fills the void of what a man is supposed to do, what are you going
okay,
to
so
do?
Okay, so here's my thing. You so want to make this an objective point of view, like we either all get, it's like to each their own. I would never say that. So here's my thing too. You want to get hung up on me saying, I want a man to provide financially. I want to be able to.
I think that's fair.
It's not even that. It's more than a man. I want a partner. I want somebody I can lean on that can lean on me. Mm-hmm. So if you financially can't step up in a certain way because everything's go up and down, then I want you to step up and be a partner in the household. How are you helping out? So like, hey, I know that you've got the job and you have to work all these hours and you have to travel and you have to do this. I need you to step up and say, hey, while you're doing that, I'm going to take care of the house and I'm going to provide for you in other ways. This is why it's so hard to have this conversation, because it's subjective. It's to each their own. Each relationship is different and each person requires something different. And what I just described to you is a reversal of the gender roles, but it's about being a partner.
Let me ask you a question.
At the end of the day. And I think people need to focus on that more.
I agree. You're not wrong. You're spitting. Let me ask you one question though. What does a man getting down on one knee and proposing to a woman
That's
signify?
That's a preference.
What to you?
Yes, it does.
What does it signify to you?
Can I also say this? I typically find that men can be more indecisive.
Than women?
I'm a very decisive person, so maybe I'm very. Men, when it comes to commitment in relationships.
No. Hold on. This is what I would say. Hold on. If a man is indecisive about whether or not he wants to be with you, it's very easy. He doesn't.
But my point is, I'm not ready, or I'm not this. I feel a lot of that.
Even when you say, oh, I'm not ready, that means you brought it up. Because I'll tell you straight up, another thing that I would tell women just quite blanketly, if that's another thing. Once again, we're not on the same page. If a man is indecisive about whether or not he wants to wife you or be with you, he doesn't want to do it.
But this is where you say men are from Mars, women are from Venus, because women are fixers. And this is the problem that we do as women. We say we don't listen to it straight up. It's why the whole thing of he's just not that into you exists. Y'all are very straightforward about what it is. As women, we'll say, well, I can fix that. Or let me give him some time. We'll make excuses for you because there's this... It's within us, this nurturing aspect, more than you guys have, because we're wired different. And that's true, where we'll give you time, we'll give you space, we'll reason it out when you're constantly telling us that you're not ready. And I think because that exists between men and women, for a man to say, boom, this is what I want,
mm-hmm.
I need that. And that to me is getting down on one knee and saying it.
Because right.
If I do it, I'm like, dude, did you want it? Did you not want it?
He's thinking the same thing.
That's what I'm thinking.
He's thinking the same thing.
And maybe he is.
He's taking a chance.
I'm telling you
He's taking a chance. All I'm saying is this. Like, what I feel like is, and I'm not a woman, but what I feel like is the reason why this exists is because it comes from a time when a man had to establish his family.
Sure.
So he asks you to marry him because then you become a part of what he is.
You take on his name.
Yeah. You have his children. It's so funny. Women don't have their children. They have his children. You take on his name. You do all of that stuff, right? Like, he goes and gets what he wants and then you become a part of his thing.
Yeah.
You become a part of his family and all of that stuff. If we want to reexamine that, I'm cool with that. I really am, if we want to reexamine that. What I'm not cool with is reexamining half of it and then saying, hey, you do this and then I'll do whatever I want and support me or you're a misogynist. Because then you know what that leads people? Then it's like, all right, well, I'm a hit hoes forever. Like, I mean, which they don't even like to do that because niggas get lonely, the hair starts to fall out. And then after that, I've seen it happen. Y'all know who I'm talking about. I've seen you. We're good friends and I love you. But you told me 2010 that you would never settle down. And then we had a conversation and you was like, bruh, I just want to be in the house. Now I wish. I'm like, oh, now you wish. Oh, not Mr. Sexy Man.
Who is this?
You don't know. Like, not Mr. Sexy Man. Now you wish. I knew it was coming. I knew the day was coming. It's coming. You want it. You want to be a part of something, the family. I get it. But all I'm saying is, it's good to have these conversations, because I think now with people making so much noise about this, I think we should reevaluate just how much work each side has to do to eliminate patriarchy.
Sure.
You don't care. Mailbag time. Time to read your letters and then we'll reply to them. Oh, it's mailbag time. Write us with your queries and we'll chime in.
All right. First question is from Adori25. This is a violent one. They ask, who would win in a fight between Rachel or Charles?
That's what?
Charles Holmes.
I know who Charles is, and yeah. I would never fight Charles.
So this is my question. This is my.
I don't know what kind of hands Charles has. Why would somebody ask me this?
So this is my issue here. There's part of me that can't see Charles winning a fight. However,
has Charles been in a fight?
I'm sure he has. However, Charles has training.
Then I'm out.
Charles has martial arts training.
Oh, well, then what are we doing here?
And then Charles also was a high school wrestler.
So how could you not see him winning a fight?
Because it's just the disposition. Because Charles is not pussy at all. Like, no. Not even like 1%. But I could also see Charles being like, get the fuck out of my face. And just getting out of
this. He's not pussy. Patriarchy.
He's not pussy. Patriarchy. Look, pussy. I call people. I own up to my shit. I'm just trying to get the directives.
You got work to do.
I definitely got work to do.
Charles will win in a fight. Easy. You got training. Easy. I'm scrappy.
Have you had fights? Oh, you told me about the fight you had in Vegas.
I'm scrappy. Vegas.
Didn't you have a fight in the bathroom in Vegas?
It was Dallas. In strip club.
All right, Charles says Rachel. Rachel says Charles. Go ahead, Donnie. Next one.
All right, next one is from Bubblepedic. This one's positive, I guess, maybe. What is something that makes you optimistic about the future?
I can't answer that question right now.
So I give the youth a lot of shit, but I do like the ideas that the youth has. The sort of utopia that they expect society to be, I think, is interesting. I think they're ill-equipped to make it happen, toughen up a little bit. But the fact that I see young people re-examining how things should be is actually very, it's cool to see that they're thinking about their world this much. Because when I was 25, I was just thinking about getting it. But
that's nice.
I think they need to toughen up a little bit. If they really want to change, they're probably going to have to get it in blood. You're not going to email your way into change. You're not going to tweet your way into it. You're probably going to have to take some heads off, fuck some faces up. But at least they want to be better. Because I'm gonna be honest with you, my parents. They didn't really want to be better. They wanted to, hey, look, you going out there, go outside. Just remember, everybody trying to kill you now. Go have some fun. What? Hey, Van, love you, boy. Just remember, when you going out with your little homies, everybody's trying to kill you. The niggas in the neighborhood trying to kill you. The police trying to kill you. They trying to kill you in the water. They trying to kill you from the sky, from the sea, from the weeds. Everyone's trying to kill you, son. So. I want you to go out and have a good time and not have anxiety or anything like that. Just know that everyone wants you dead because you're black. Have fun. That's my life.
What's the next question, Donnie?
The next one is about parents. Cantaloupe Steve asks,
Cantaloupe Steve.
What's a moment? Cantaloupe Steve. Yeah, I think that's a dope name too. What's a moment where you felt yourself becoming more like your parents?
Rachel, the first nigga you put in jail?
What are you talking about?
That was the DA.
He was not the DA.
He wasn't the DA?
Mm-mm. I haven't put anybody in jail. When did I? I don't know.
You're a lot like your parents to me.
That's a good question. You don't know my parents.
But I know from what I know of them.
You think so?
Yeah. Your dad has this like strength and wisdom. You know?
I'm really trying to think. I don't know. You know when you became like your parents?
I do know.
There's like a moment?
Yep. So, back in the day, I had made a mistake. And they cut the cable off. Because I made a mistake. Like, I thought, so, you know, they used to have the cable boxes. They don't have them anymore.
So,
they had the cable box. And you had to switch the cable box out. But I didn't do it in time. And the old box wouldn't work with the new thing that they were doing, so they cut the cable off. So I remember I stopped on my way back from TMZ to pay for the new box and to arrange for them to come do the thing. I mean, I'm standing in the cable thing, and I'm like, yeah, so I paid him. And I was like, all right, so what time y'all coming out here to pay the cable? And the guy goes, we'll be there next Saturday. I'm like, next Saturday? And he was like, yeah, we'll be next Saturday. It takes like 7 days to process the request and get somebody out there. I remember in the thing, I went, it didn't take y'all no goddamn 7 days to cut it off. Why would it take you 7 days to turn it back on? And it was so country and old that everybody laughed. It was so country and old. And I had heard my dad say the exact same thing. It was so country and old that they laughed and everybody laughed. And I was like, oh, shit.
He was like, sir,
I'm going to see if there's a tech in your area. Just take this new box with you. I'm going to see if there's a tech in your area. We're going to try to get it done today. Are you okay? And I'm like, yeah. And that is what, like, when I started caring about stuff like that, just the ease of doing stuff.
Yeah.
Just how hard you're making something. Like, just the ease of it. Pause. Just like how hard you're making something. You know what I mean? Double pause. Just like the ease of it. When I start complaining about that, that's when.
I guess that I don't have a moment, but I understand what you're saying.
You know, because I'm like, now I don't have time for the bullshit. When I pay for something, I just want what I pay for. Like, just...
You expect things to be a certain way.
Just do the shit right. And when I was a kid, didn't really matter.
You had more patience.
I was more patient. Like, whatever, you, like, whatever, whatever. It's like, now, I'm not a dick about it, but I'm like, hey, man, I know y'all could be better than this. I know you could do better. I know things could be better. Call somebody up, trying to make a payment over the phone. And let me tell you something else. Last thing I'll say about this. This is kind of like when you get more conservative, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And you have to check yourself. You really have to check yourself, because now...
That's true.
Yo, I'm exhausted. I'm this, I'm that. I'm calling somebody up to help me over the phone with something. If there are glitches in communication, like, I start to get a little like, hey, God damn it. Like, I ain't got all day to be doing.
I'm sure they've witnessed it.
You're like, I'm like, hey, God damn it. I ain't got time to be going through all this. What the fuck? But hey, man, don't be that guy. Bring it down.
I'm going to start responding to you like that. Van, don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Hey, man. Bring it down. Bring it down. Bring it down. Anyway, and that's how my dad was.
Maybe it's when I started sending angry emails. I get what you mean about, like, things need to be in order. I remember when I was a kid, because my dad does not like to type on the computer. So there was a response that he would want to give, and he would ask my mom if she could help him type it. And, you know, like, when he was done with the shits, and he would, like, need to, like, put somebody in order, or, like, he'd always have his points lined out and exactly how he wanted to say it in particular. And everything was like not a case, but like an argument, right? Like the issues, how you're taught to think in law school, IRAC. The issues, the rules, the application, the conclusion.
They teach you to be down for IRAC?
It's spelled IRAC.
I knew they was fucking radicalizing y'all.
And when I started doing that and getting excited about it, getting excited about typing up an email where I was going to put somebody in their place, I'm like, I become my father.
That's another thing real quick before we go that I know, because like it used to be Friday's coming. Like, what are you excited about? Man, we going out to bar. We going out to chill. Like, Friday's coming. Van, what are you excited about? Look, I'm excited about this new documentary on the History Channel that's coming on. It's called Ancient Aliens 5. Where do we come from? I'm going to sit down from 1 to 7. I'm going to watch the first 3 Ancient Aliens, then Ancient Aliens 5 with a nice beverage and just chill.
Or taking Sundays to get your mind right, ready for the week.
Or like seeing stuff that come on and you're so excited. It's like the Temptations is on. Oh my God!
Every time.
Oh my God, the Temptations is going. Maybe I can catch it but when David Ruffin comes for dinner, because that's when the movie really takes off. That's when the movie really takes off. When the Temptations is on, I'm not doing nothing. Van, you want to? Nah, man, Temptations is on. Anyway, we got to go. Look, thank you guys for everything and listening and all of that stuff. We'll see you again Monday. Next week, South by Southwest. You going?
I'll be there.
What are you doing there?
I'm speaking, moderating a panel for vote.org.
Vote.org?
Yeah.
Who you gonna tell people to vote for? Biden?
I don't think that's my job. I'm moderating. But if the opportunity presents itself, actually, a part of what vote.org is not telling people how they should vote.
Fuck vote.org then. Hey, treat vote.org like y'all be treating me. Fuck them. Who cares who you vote? Vote for who? It should be voteforbiden.org.
Keep that same energy with your boy.
Who?
Not vote.org.
We talk. Hey, I'm telling you right now, this is what we're being told. So look, vote.org, I'm calling you out right now, vote.org.
Stop.
I'm calling you out.
Who are you on a panel for?
Huh?
Who are you on a panel for?
The Black Twitter documentary. Niggas. So shout out to everybody out there. Shout out to Carrie Twig and Culture House and Prentice Penny and Jawad Jacoby and everybody. We're going out there. Onyx, Hulu, all of that. We're going to talk about Black Twitter. I got a special cowboy hat for Austin.
You bring a cowboy
Get
hat?
Your own little doggies. That's me. My name next week is not Van. It's Perry Potluck.
When is your panel?
I actually don't know. I have to.
Mine is Friday. If you're at South by Southwest, come check it out.
South by Southwest with it. Get your own little doggies. All right. We got to go. Take the caps off. Now stop learning. I'm Van Lathan Jr.
I'm Rachel and Lindsay. Bye, guys.